This tumble crew has a plan, and they begin by digging into those
two scoops
in every Kellogg's pack.
Two scoops.
I'll keep them coming back for
two scoops
of plump, juicy raisins
in Kellogg's Raisin Bran.
Hooked up and in command. They're working now, but they're thinking how they love
two scoops
and Golden Flakes and Bran.
Two scoops.
They're turning back again for
two scoops
of plump, juicy raisins
in Kellogg's Raisin Bran.
Welcome to the fifth episode proper of Two Scoops, the episodic, esoteric, shit culture drama that's about to give 2,000% effort today. Why? To disabuse you of the idea that passion and imagination are virtues. In fact, they may actually be the most terrifying and monstrous things when someone sits down in front of their keyboard. They're human ideas that we definitely need to cast down. My name's Jordan Breen. I'm joined, as always, by my slash fic partner. If I'm Kirk, he's Spock, I presume. But yes, indeed, most logically, it's David Bix and Span. Bix, we were kicking around some heavy ideas about what to do today. We had an original idea, which we will table for another day, because I think it's not only is it rich, it's beautiful, like the tree itself, it's evergreen, and we could bust it out any day. But recently, we had ourselves some discursive lulls on this very show about fan fiction. How strange it is, how the depth, the breadth, the fact that if there's a show on television or a thing you're into, anything that involves a character, fictional or non-fictional, you're going to find someone writing about it and making them have sex with someone that perhaps they were not intended to. David Bix and Span, what hits you in the heart, hits you in the mind, and hits you in the funny bone about fan fiction?
First of all, I really do not like you encouraging our listeners to write Bix slash Breen fanfic.
How do you think that would go?
Would we be bricks?
Ooh, good question. On top of that, too.
Would we be Bix and Breen?
I don't know. I always hate like the portmanteau kind of things. I like to think we'd be above it. I like to think that the kind of folks listen to our show, and then, I mean, this is the regular show, to say nothing of our great Patreon supporters. I like to think that even the kind of person that stumbles upon Two Scoops and hasn't thrown down the cursory $5 a month, they're of the kind of artistic and thoughtful pen or quill that even if I didn't court the idea, even if I didn't push the idea that I'm Kirk and you're Spock, that if they were so moved to write Two Scoops fan fiction, I think we'd come out okay. I don't think we would end up on any kind of website for the most the kind of greatest literary and sexual atrocities possible. I think we'd have a beautiful and fictional romantic relationship, Bix.
That's reassuring.
You know, we got a great chemistry. I think, you know, we could make great hypothetical fictional lovers be.
That's what I've heard.
I mean, keep your ear to the ground. Maybe that dope fan fiction's to come. Do you remember the first time that you encountered fan fiction, either in the flesh, in the text, reading an actual bit of fan fiction, or even kind of became hip to the concept?
Are we talking about in general or specifically the eroticized subgenre?
Give me both. Give me the evolution of your idea and sort of knowledge of fanfic.
Okay, in general. My sister, and she has, I think, written and blogged and maybe even performed parts of this. She had notebooks filled with her all-new Mickey Mouse Club fanfic.
Holy shit. I mean, I've made light of your sister in the past being both beautiful and talented and maybe the podcast partner I really want. But are you...
How dare you?
Are you legit kidding me? How old is she at this point in time? Like, I'm assuming she's age appropriate, but yes. Just for clarity, how old is she at this point?
Well, when did that go on the air? 90, I guess.
You tell me.
She's a tween. She's a tween.
Okay. So ripe. I mean, I think especially in that era, the pre-internet era, I do want to talk about how I think maybe the medium and the art form has changed its demographic over the years.
Yeah.
But at this point in time, to my mind, that is kind of the grassroots non-slash fic fan fiction foundation. As weird as that might seem, Mickey Mouse Club. I mean, not to put your sister on blast, but like, did you ever thumb through the diary? Is there any like highlights that
oh god, I don't know. She has the stuff though. Oh, here we go. I just googled Lynn Bixenspan Mickey Mouse Club fanfic. Somehow she where she was interviewed by Inverse earlier in this year. Lynn, how do you get started in comedy? You said your childhood TV obsession in the Mickey that was the Mickey Mouse Club. Now I remember watching it, but cannot tell you a thing about it. Explain the show to me. Cool preteen, and then Lynn says, cool preteens and teens sing, dance, do terrible sketches that I knew were terrible at the time, and are generally cool. To 10 to 12 year old singing Dork Lynn, that is. Every day was themed. Monday was music day with cool kids like New Kids on the Block, and Friday was Hall of Fame day, where they honored teens doing good works in the community and stuff, blah, 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 blah. Now, wait, where's the fanfic part? Let's see. This has to be in here. Okay, wait, there we go. You wrote erotic Mickey Mouse Club fan fiction, right? Why make this erotic? I don't think it was erotic, though. I think she's making this up. In reality, I never. Oh no, she did write a Mouseketeer sex scene. Okay, she said I never even kissed anyone when I wrote the me as Mouseketeer sex scene. And
this is obviously a future segment. Your sister will be produced on this podcast to read this very thing in future. I would have it no other way. Right. Nonetheless, give the readers a teaser here.
Oh, she did post one of these. Okay, she did post one of these on Tumblr.
Would you care to bless us with a savory paragraph or so? The nature of fan fiction.
I'm not reading this. You are.
Oh, are you? Is that how this is going to work?
No, that's not how I'm laying down the gauntlet for later. But I'm there's no way I'm reading this. I'm not reading this out loud.
Does it hurt too much when it's that close?
Of course it does.
All right, this is not that long by fan fiction standards. Fortunately,
I might ask you to read the whole thing.
I think I might.
Oh boy.
So, oh boy. So as Bernie Miller would so enjoy, we're going to get into David Bixenspan's sister's desperately wishing I were a Mouseketeer, and specifically,
hey, we didn't even get into your introduction to fanfic yet.
After I read this, I'll be all too happy to discuss it.
Oh, boy.
How I lost my virginity at age 12 to a fellow Mouseketeer. It was an accident. Jesus, I'm embarrassed to even admit it to myself. Me, Rona, and JC were going to meet at Tony's house. It was incredible by Florida standards, totally out there. The outside was perfectly country, the classic rider and horse-drawn carriage on the doors, squat thatched roof, a warm teal blue. I rang the doorbell, which played, "Stop, I didn't make this up." Home on the Range. Tony swung open the door.
I don't think, now that I think about it, I need to talk to her about this. I don't think this is one of her real ones from back then. And this might be like her weird Tumblr series of Lena Dunham having sex with Taylor Swift and being interrupted by... Why am I forgetting his name all of a sudden?
You're really doing the hard sell for your sister here. Does she have any dates coming up where people can buy tickets? Like,
oh, I would have to check. Well, what's his name that said his dick was David Duke?
What?
What's his face?
I'm leaving you all alone on this one.
John Mayer.
Oh, John. Oh, yeah. I was gonna say Bodies of Wonderland, idiot. But yes, that is in fact John Mayer. It took me a second to realize what you were talking about. I'm sorry, Bix. So you're trying to cover up for your sister here, but no.
No, I think this specific one, I don't think this is necessarily something she... This is specifically, I'm not sure if it's one she...
So why'd you bait and switch me like this? By the way,
it's been a while since I had attempted to read this.
Does that also help your sister's case? Your sister's like in her 30s writing this?
But it's comedic fanfic.
Is it? I walked back. He closed the door. He put his arm around me, but this time I knew his intentions were more than friendly. He pulled me close to him. Finally, after an eternity, he kissed me harder and harder. I would French him, and he knew it. And so we did. We kissed for a long time, pressed hard together. We fell onto his bed, kissing, kissing, Kissing on a bed is very incriminating. Looking straight at his front door, I felt nervous. He was very fast. That hand went straight to my thigh. But he stopped, found my shirt front, felt it, rejected it, and pulled it off. Unhooked my bra. He felt me up, but it was so different from Kevin. Of course it was different from Kevin. With all due respect to Kevins out there, he's a Kevin. So gentle, so sweet. He played with my nipples until they stood straight out. It felt so good. I stroked his chest, his shirt off. It was only fair. Women's lib and all that crap.
So when there's no way she wrote this as a tween in 1990, in the early 1990s.
I think your sister is just a really horny 12-year-old. So when he started going to sloppy second, bringing his lips down to my breath, sucking on my nipples, the whole thing, I could just imagine what a hickey. But who would see, right? I just made up my friend that we would not go any further. No way in hell. What kind of slut would he think I was? He was obviously testing me. I'd learned that you can't let them get too far or they don't respect you. I don't put out. I'm a virgin. I pushed him off of me. He understood I've already been further than your average 13-year-old. But when you really love Kevin. I slipped my jeans off. I was almost embarrassed. I felt like I had to pretend it was a bikini bottom.
So, Jordan. How did you become acquainted with fan fiction?
He started teasing me, pulling at my underwear. Pulled it off. He knew right where to rub my clit. That's about the sound I was waiting for. So I got into fan fiction. I shouldn't say got into fan fiction. It makes it sound like I'm an avid author and frequent auteur or something like that. But I first became aware of it on the internet, going back to our last show, talking about how I got into Sleepaway Camp. And really an ongoing theme of this show. I was young and unsupervised, clearly like you and your fucking sister. So I had too much time on the internet as a kid that was precocious and curious. And Bix, you're a pop culture dude, so I assume that you may not have a preference, but you're more of a Star Trek or Star Wars dude.
Star Wars.
So as high artistry, obviously got to go Star Wars. I think the new movies are mostly insipid shit, but I actually do think if you – and shit, maybe it's a show all to itself for Two Scoops someday. I actually think if you divorce it from the complete mythos and mythology and prequels, sequels, and all the rest, Empire Strikes Back is truly a great film. It's – a beautiful pastiche of so many styles, so much going on. The villain wins. I loved Star Wars as soon as I saw it, but I was more acquainted with Star Trek first growing up. I would say that I didn't really give Star Wars its due treatment at all until I think maybe I was 10. Christmas when I was 10, so maybe like 97. I got the boxed VHS set. And I didn't even rock to it for a few years. And then I just remember maybe like being bored in fifth or sixth grade, you know, too much internet and jerking off or whatever. And I'm awake late, like got to fall asleep before school. Oh, like I got this Star Wars on VHS. And I just remember getting into it.
I think I got to ask TJ now for the Jordan Breen Spank Bank.
Maybe. So I got into Star Wars late, but I loved Star Trek early on. It's something I grew up with and watched a ton of growing up and was just constantly exposed to through various things, both the original series and TNG. So when I got to the internet and, you know, I don't think I was doing any kind of deep probing Star Trek research or anything like that, but I quickly became appraised of the idea of slash fic. And the idea that, oh my God, for decades, people have been writing stories about Kirk and Spock being in romantic trysts and the like, and one of them giving birth to the other one's baby and other anatomical impossibilities. And that, for me, was the first time I ever became aware of the idea at all that not only were people taking existing narratives and characters and finding ways to interact with them and create their own tales and stories for a variety of reasons, but also the more sexualized and in the case of the LGBTQ community, the slash fic side of things. That was the first time I was ever appraised of it. And then I would say quickly from there, it's one of those things where, you know, you find out about something and then suddenly you see it everywhere. I felt like it was not long after that that I saw a story about, Xena Warrior Princess is bringing in this, you know, acclaimed fan fiction writer to write multiple episodes. And so that's how I kind of became aware of it, but it was never really a part of my life, so to speak. And then, you know, you fast forward so many years, the genre changed, to say the least. It became accessible to way more people as the internet opened up. And I think certain kinds of series, franchises, and brands became popular that lend themselves to this kind of creative injection. And then maybe, oh God, maybe 7 or 8 years ago, I suddenly became hip to the fact that Harry Potter fan fiction was not only very real, it was very vile, very upsetting, and very insane. And I would say from there, I just sort of realized that, oh my God, the internet, this is a huge thing. If you're into a TV show, if you're into a certain style of band, if you're into just about anything, there is some kind of fanfic community out there that supports this thing.
For me, I think then the big online thing, if I had to guess, it would probably be pro wrestling related, which makes it all creepier because these are either real people or a vague approximation of real people.
I'm totally on board with this, especially in light of I had a class my third year of my undergrad, and it was basically about like changing media formats. You know, so early on in the course, I wrote a paper about, owing to my love of Tales from the Crypt and the like, EC Comics and the decency trials of the 1950s and stuff like that. And late in the course, I ended up writing about literally pro wrestling fan fiction. And based on the fact, Bix, that I would have written this paper in the year 2010, 2011 or so, who do you think I found like the deepest fanfic more than two scoops on?
Jeff Hardy.
Jeff and Matt Hardy, you better fucking believe it, baby. I didn't intend it to be, but at first I intended like, oh my God, fanfic is such a perfect idea for this. And I kind of had the idea that my prof at the time would be very hip to this idea as a guy that was into alternative subcultures and digital spaces. I thought this is perfect. I had no idea when I got into it that it was going to turn into almost a solely Hardy's represented thing and that it would be almost entirely incestuous. I had no idea this is how, you know, it's like you click on any kind of fanfic story now, the depths that how deep the rabbit hole goes, it never surprises me anymore. The details may shock me, but I expect when I click on a piece of fan fiction now, Bix, to kind of have my senses horrified.
Oh, absolutely. Like, there's stuff that I don't remember how I found this stuff in the first place. Maybe it's better that I don't. Like, we're talking, you know. If I say anything awful, it's because I don't know how else to represent what the intent of the artist was, so to speak. There's also on the pro wrestling tip, Kevin Nash raping Scott Hall while not realizing that he is.
Well, on the pro wrestling tip alone, one of the reasons that we ended up nearly in tears. I got you, baby. One of the reasons we ended up nearly in tears on this show is that in just talking about fan fiction for 5 to 10 minutes, we ended up stumbling upon a story that seemed, you know, even though we read virtually none of it, I think one of us clicked on it, maybe read two or three sentences for lulls. But this multi-paragraph, maybe multi-chapter episodic tale seemed to tell of a world where Randy Orton was planning to rape John Cena. And that's just something that came up almost immediately on Google.
Yeah, there's a lot of that, it seems like.
So how does this change? Because early on...
How many of these people are even... like? My understanding is these are mostly straight females.
That when you look at sort of the sociology behind fanfic and like it appears to be a largely heteronormative female pursuit, largely, not exclusively, to be sure. And I mean, I got some doozies lined up that are written ostensibly by men, but there seems to be a very clear shift. And I mean, I don't have the deep scholarly research on this to make this fully academic, but when you look at the rise of slash fic, like slash fic really is the way that fan fiction takes off because it's seen as this way for the queer community to interact with these things that they like and find popular, but find ways to bend them to their narrative, to create a world where they're included. And this is viewed as and righteously so.
As self-insert fanfic, yes.
Yes. And the self-insert not just in terms of the author avatar, but to be able to insert larger themes and narratives, you know? If you're – dude, Star Trek was a cult pursuit, you know? It's something that caught on later. People were not rocking during the initial two seasons like, this is the best. By the time people saw this – gay people were still not widely accepted. If you were a gay Star Trek fan by the time you finally saw this thing in the late 70s or something like that, you may very well totally get the idea of like, you know, in a different world, if I had thought of this, Kirk and Spock, I get that. So when you look at the kind of more literary and academic legitimization of slash fic and fanfic, it's radical feminist Joanna Russ, who also did a ton of science fiction writing, but also did a ton of important literary criticism. She famously wrote How to Suppress Women's Writing and was really a unique figure in like kind of the intersections that she is. She was a radical feminist and wrote a lot on the actual process of writing and the underpinnings of the politics behind it, but she also legitimately wrote science fiction and the like and saw a huge, enormous value in this and a value in studying it. So early on, this is seen as a way for people who are marginalized but who are moved by these narratives, these characters, these stories to interact with them in a way that they would never get to otherwise and, you know, really open like a – not just a chance for a different kind of understanding, but a different way to enjoy, you know, a TV show or a movie or a comic book or whatever for an entire subculture. Bix, I think it's fair to say in 2016 that the parameters have changed slightly.
Yes. Fanfic is not inherently bad.
No. I'm sure. I mean, dude, who among us? Like, I mean, real talk, even going back to something like Law and Order. How many times have you watched an episode or, you know, we do the deep dive on who the best junior ADAs are? How many times do you do something like that or have a conversation like that and not come away thinking like, man, if I could have done it? We've all thought of ways to make an episode better or a character better or if they develop this. This is natural.
I didn't realize you were ending there. Yeah, of course. It's just an outgrowth of that. Not everyone's going to put it down on paper. Some people will, and there's nothing wrong with that. However, some people take it in some very, very strange directions. And that's what we're here to bring to you, the dear Two Scoops listener.
I hate to be that, you know, kind of, maybe not Luddite, but technologically fearing sky is falling sort of figure who laments, oh my God, take something like fan fiction, look how the internet has corrupted it. But Bix, it seems hard for me to not see a very obvious connection between how easy it is. And like, it is great that subcultures of all kinds from all over the world can find other people like them on the internet and not just be galvanized together and create unity and individually feel like they're not alone. whether you have some weird fetish or some kind of world belief or whatever the case might be, you can find a level of solidarity. This is beautiful. But when I look at fan fiction, I can't help but think, yeah, this is something that was probably drastically helped by having hyper-literate but strange people type Star Trek stories out on typewriters. Now that we've gotten to a world of housebound people that have obsessively read the Harry Potter books as 40-year-old divorcees and watched all the films in front of their computer screen, the content we get now ends up being infinitely more, never mind lecherous or sexually rapacious, or it's downright psychotic. The things that we will read in this show, we laughed at Criminal Minds, but like, not only are people like this the reason that we need a behavioral analysis unit at Quantico, these are also the people who were Criminal fucking Minds fans, Bix.
And we didn't even talk about fan art.
Okay, that's...
Well, let me show you something. Let me show you something.
If you okay, we're trying to do this show. If you show me a picture of like Sonic the Hedgehog having sex with, I don't know, like Danny DeVito or something.
Oh no, it's not that bad.
I mean, okay. I'm waiting for this link. All right, I'm about to click on it. Don't know what I'm getting myself into. Oh boy.
That's some membranes.
So Bix has sent me a colored pencil drawing. Muted tones. We got some beiges, we got some peaches, we got two shades of blue, we got a dark gray and a black, very limited color scheme. Nice little hand drawing of Professor Dean Ambrose straddling one Roman Reigns. They both look very content. They both look very happy in blissful in the cowgirl position, and the way the blue around, the light blue is shaded around Roman Reigns, it appears he's in some kind of recliner or magical water dinghy raft type thing. They're enjoying a romantic moment either at sea, in the living room. It's, again, I can understand. Dude, it's legit. Like, this is the thing that makes it hard to talk about fan fiction. I think you hinted at this moments ago, Bix. It's hard to look at narratives like this and dismiss them as illegitimate, because that's not what's at stake. You know, even all we know about pro wrestling, and obviously a lot of our listeners are going to have considerable pro wrestling sensibilities, it goes without saying that a Dean Ambrose Roman Reigns secret lover angle would not go over especially well. It would not be handled relatively delicately, smartly. It would not be well written. It would be crass, terrible. It would be all-time wrestle crap. No question.
Yes, correct.
But it is not fundamentally a bad idea that two high-level competitive wrestlers in the biggest wrestling promotion in the world, who happened to be stable mates before and were ostracized by kayfabe gimmick circumstances, it stands the reason that they may love each other and maybe want to straddle each other and then blow each other later. That is not an illegitimate – that's very real.
Of course not. On the other hand, there's also this.
oh, Lord. What am I about to – I'm not sure what this is. What is this? Is this a baby anime kawaii Dean Ambrose in a diaper with,
and I think that's Seth Rollins. Yes.
A baby kawaii Seth Rollins in a diaper with his hair and pigtails. Is that what this is?
Yes, I believe so.
So perfectly segueing into what I was going to say, it's not so much that a lot of the narratives offered in fan fiction are ridiculous, incredible, or illegitimate. It's mostly that when these people execute them in a textual form, the deep ghoulish elements of whoever's writing these things comes out to a point where, honestly, I'll talk about my method for selecting the fan fiction that I want to share with you today, Bix, but
oh dear.
In doing so, I actually found it overwhelmingly difficult to suss through, even given my method, is this a troll or is this not? Some fan fiction I see and just think, is this a 4chan B person or someone on some weird subreddit who just has too much time on their hands and takes this on a lark and just thinks, I'm hyper literate, I'm bored, I'm high at 2 a.m., I'm going to get it and pretend like I'm – like I know a few Pokemon. I'm going to pretend like I wrote this Pokemon fan fiction and really mess with people. It gets to a point where I literally can't even tell anymore. And I think anytime your art form or medium gets to a point where parody and satire can scarcely be recognized as parody and satire because they're so close to the real thing.
You have to give up.
Something has gone terribly wrong. Like there is a major
loop. Here's this.
All right. Whew. All right. Deep breath before I click on this bad boy. Okay. So
I can already hear you being confuzzled by the thumbnail.
So this appears to be an author insert because I've never heard of Pro Wrestler Blade.
Yes, you're correct so far.
We appear to have a furry animalistic. What are they? Are they foxes?
I'm going with foxes. Yes, of the Shield of Roman Reigns, Dean Ambrose, and Seth Rollins.
All right. So when you identify
as new friend Blade,
I don't mean this in like glibness to sound like a dick, but like what is it when you're an animal thing? What do they call it? Like foxkin? Is that
what
call this?
Too deep for me, Brian.
I'm trying to not misgender or misspecify
other kin, I believe.
Okay, but in this case, since we've identified them, fox kin.
Oh, so is it specific to the animal?
That I think it is if you get specific. So we have fox kin Seth Rollins, fox kin Roman Reigns, who is still wearing a bulletproof vest, which. I mean, people do hunt foxes, so it's a good idea. Foxkin Dean Ambrose, who is highly effeminate, and the even more effeminate avatar author insert Blade, who is wearing some kind of a strange button-down sweater that is not – like quarter button-down sweater and looking very much like he wants to be sexually assaulted by these pro wrestlers.
How dare you.
So this is the thing I'm driving at. As we talk about this, if you're a fan fiction person, don't feel offended on the deepest philosophical grounds. There's an inherent value to fan fiction. There's a value in people being able to interact with no matter what you think of low culture mediums. Even if you don't think that, you know, TV is something that requires deep exegesis or that, you know, it's a waste of me and Bix's time to talk about slasher movies from 30 years ago. I mean, not only are you wrong, but the fact is to the people who relate to them, especially if they're not represented in larger mainstream fashions, there's a huge value in being able to reimagine these narratives. Unfortunately, as Bix and I will detail and maybe attempt to suss out the reason for this medium has gone off the deep end in the internet era and just become a sexually wanton, terrifying, rapist haven of brain bone breaking insanity. Bix, before my heart starts racing and palpitating too much, anticipating the horrible things ahead of us, shall we break out the broom?
Now it's time for something non-fattening and packed with energy. Buttermilk biscuits.
Yeah! Hey, don't want to tune in on Red.
Oh,
come on, Rod.
That was my safety.
Coke here. We got a Coke here. We got a Coke here.
I got a pound and bun.
What happened to yours?
Milk drink. Man, Josh, you should see this chick in the front row right here. The boy's shirt. Oh, yes. Give me some skin. I got to taste it.
Whoa!
Now I'm your big mall dropper, mud duck stopper, feel on the bottom and it is on the topper. Transform scratching, big beat matching, I can tell you getting just by the looks I'm catching. It's a chance to take, but I'm no fake. Won't surprise that shape, stay smooth like ice. Don't get nice, just kick up the jam for the mouse club slide. Y'all ready to get busy? Let me hear ya.
Now buttermilk biscuits, here we go. Zip the flour, roll the dough. Your hands and stomp your feet. Move your butt to the funky beat. Yes, you. Buttermilk biscuits.
Uh-huh.
Them buttermilk biscuits.
Yeah.
yesterday.
Wait, homeboy, come on, shake your leg. Give me 10 of them suckers with grits and egg. Got some Kool-Aid and a whole stick of butter. Them biscuits make me a super fast cutter. Yes, yes.
Actually, before we get too dirty in the imaginative fan fiction realm, we should clean things up around here. Time for a little housekeeping. As always, if you need to get in contact with us lovely folks, it's at Jordan Breen for me on Twitter. It's at David Bix for David Bix and Span. If you need the whole show, it's at Two Scoops Pod. And definitely follow us, because the more people we get to follow us, the sooner we can get bots who tweet basically algorithmic fan fiction at people in an attempt to get them to click on spam. And I want bots, Bix.
What type of bots? Are you thinking like a fanfic equivalent of horse ebooks?
Oh my God. If such a thing exists, I pray it ends up following us. Well, I pray.
See, is there a fanfic _ ebooks?
So also quickly, we'll get to Patreon in a second, but
there is, but it's not a bot account.
Before we get to Patreon, who is going to be like our first actual like legit, with all due respect to everyone who's followed us so far, who's going to be our legit first famous follower? Because we got some likes and retweets from like the likes of Jill Hennessy of Law and Order and Crossing Jordan and country music fame. And we got the like and hopefully forthcoming retweet from Sleepaway Camp Felissa Rose. Who's going to be like our first actual like celebrity rocker, Bix?
Celebrity MMA judge Ben Cartlidge.
Oh, I mean that's an entirely due and possible outcome.
Oh, but not connected to the MMA or pro wrestling spheres.
Yeah, not necessarily connected to spheres, and maybe even connected to the our spheres of influence, like not our independent spheres of influence, but the spheres that influence us and get us excited. The Law and Order slasher film, strange media coverage, dusty old commercial type folk.
Peter Thiel.
Oh boy, can you imagine? Can you imagine? By the way, the fact that it's caught on so quickly. I didn't realize its potential. I really should have trademarked the idea of calling him the Lizard Man.
Is that trademarkable?
I don't know. I don't know if it is. But here's the thing. Am I wrong? David Bix and Span, in your heart of hearts and mind of minds, knowing that it's impossible, knowing that even as an ancient, millennia-old, Lovecraftian beast like yourself, capable of shape-shifting and destroying of worlds, if there was any human being alive, I use human being loosely, that you truly believed was capable.
You also use alive loosely.
Yeah. I mean, in the Lovecraftian sense, he might be like whatever the doctor is named in Cold Air who needs all the air conditioners to stop him from melting and decomposing. If there was any person, any humanoid figure alive who the masses take to be a warm-blooded human being that you were utterly convinced could shapeshift and turn into some kind of not just lizard creature, but supernatural, possibly super-powered mutant lizard creature, who on earth would you take other than the positively horrific Peter Thiel?
Oh, other than Peter Thiel?
I mean... This is my point. Would you even have a close number two? Can you even think of someone who quite, and it's not even just the sheer degree of money or stage that he has. You know, if there was just some kind of middling Silicon Valley figure, or even on the political side, even if there was some kind of, you know, sad Hillary man type who had 400,000 followers on Twitter by just sitting around all day drawing a paycheck and trying to stir up partisan animosity. Who? You can't put anyone close to Peter Thiel because he's literally the spookiest person alive. So I mean, I can't really say I disagree with you there. It's just I feel sad as time rolls along and people realize what a scary, terrifying, massive atoms he is, loath to even call him humanoid, as people realize just how terrifying his electron arrangement is. I feel all the more I should have trademarked Lizard Man ahead of time. If you need to email us, maybe got some links on how we could, you know, in 80s horror movie fashion, take out Peter Thiel. I don't know what kills lizard people. I don't know if it's silver bullets or got to set them on fire, put a stake through their chest. Like, or do you need to use the, oh God, what's the ceremonial satanic knife that Glenn Hobbs describes in Pagan?
Oh, I you broke my brain that time. So, I don't know.
Satanic ceremonial knife. What do you got, Google? The Atame. I don't know if you need to kill Peter Thiel with the Atame. I'm completely unsure. So if
not
you got
that we're suggesting such a thing, we're absolutely not.
No. And in this era of Twitter, like, yeah, please don't send the police and government after us. Nonetheless, if you got hot tips about how to take down Peter Thiel, twoscoopspod@gmail.com. You can
non-violently
spell T-W-O, or maybe the violent email. The one where you can send all the really nasty ones that fully lay out a militaristic, you know, SEAL Team 6 type situation for taking out Peter Thiel. Send them to twoscoopspod@gmail.com with the numeral 2. Got an RSS feed. We're up on iTunes.
Yes, that's probably for the best. I figured to realize where you were going with it.
Not to linger on it too long. We got an RSS feed. We're up on iTunes. Before we get to Patreon and Amazon, am I missing anything, Bick?
I think that's it. You know, all that info is on twoscoopspod.com as far as subscribing and all that. I guess now we move on to why you would maybe want to support us on Patreon and do what Jordan's.
Hang on. Real quick. I mean, this is how we get discursive. Have I ever either told you the Jordy story privately or told it on air?
Does this involve toddler singer Jordy?
It does involve me as a toddler, in fact. Boy.
Jordy Breen. Okay.
So I'll make this quick, although
this is what I get for not being able to talk. Being unable to talk.
We can revisit this whenever we end up interviewing my mother or whatever on Two Scoops. But I went through a phase when I was about early three to maybe three and a half, not quite four, where learning right and wrong, learning the ideas of consequence, learning about, you know, lying and like telling the truth and this kind of thing. So as I mentioned in past, when I mentioned standing up in a movie theater when I was 3 years old and yelling, "That's not funny," when Cruella de Vil told her various baddies to shut up during 101 Dalmatians and the rest of the children in the theater laughed because I was so concerned with manners. I created this duality when I was 3 years old. Like, I never had like an imaginary friend or anything, but I created essentially an imaginary accomplice. And anytime I would do anything weird or upsetting or break something and my parents were like, "Why would you do this, Jordan? You can't," I would just say, "Yeah, Jordy did it." And for like 18 months of my life, I steadfastly maintained that there was some kind of alter ego that existed in our home that manifested from my physical being called Jordy, that whenever I was just a fucking shitty kid and like smeared peanut butter on the wall or broke something, I just blamed it on Jordy for like a solid year and a half.
Can I just say this explains so much?
What does it specifically explain to you, David Bixenspan?
Everything.
So in the interest of explaining everything, we got Patreon and Amazon left. Save Patreon for last, since we've already teased it excitingly multiple times, but you always need things. You always need the drone to fly by your house and drop off a new television set, a sectional sofa, Duran Duran's arena, Sleepaway Camp, the tripartite exciting DVD series. In this case, shit, maybe Harry Potter, Pokemon, some pro wrestling DVDs, Bix. how can the people help us on Amazon, and what exciting things might they be able to procure?
Okay, if you want to go to our Amazon referral thingy, it's tinyurl.com/2scoopsAmazon. That is tinyurl.com/2scoopsAmazon. Just go there, add whatever you want to your cart, check out. We get a kickback from Amazon. You don't pay anything extra over what you would pay normally going through regular Amazon. Just this way, we get a little bit of extra whatever from Amazon for referring the sale to them. And is that all we have for Amazon? Are we pointing to anything specific? Or,
I mean, in this particular case, anytime you've ever watched a television serial, a film, a music video, anything with some kind of video representation, perhaps even a book, perhaps even your favorite character from something that's somehow never been turned into a film or miniseries or a television series or anything of that nature. Any characters you like that you ever thought, man, could have been different. If I did it my way, buy that thing. tinyurl.com/2scoopsAmazon, T-W-O, or with the two. Give us that kickback. Buy that book, buy that movie, buy that DVD series, that comic book, that, I don't know.
Graphic novel.
A graphic novel. I was trying to think if there's any like weird, I was going to say like household product. I don't know if people like
Scrimshaw.
But I was going to say like, do people write fan fiction about like, you know, like Dutch Boy or like the Mr. Clean?
So if you want to support us on Patreon.
Where, I mean, as strange as this show is, I would say so far the Patreon shows slightly more decadent and depraved. more Kentucky Derby-like.
Yeah, so far I would definitely say that on Patreon there was definitely more talk about and if you want to hear the Patreon shows where we do a bonus show for you each and every week, that's patreon.com/2scoops. That's patreon.com/TWO scoops. It's also linked on 2scoopspod.com. This week, on both sides of this new free show, we've got some Sleepaway Camp for you. Part one's already up. That covers everything that we talk about before talking about the infamous big reveal. And then part two, which will go up during the week, that will cover all the more spoilery parts that include the discussion of the specific big reveal in that movie. Also, for some reason, lots and lots of...
Yeah, I mean, I think this Patreon episode is a good indicator. We've done three of these things so far.
It may not be the norm, though, for various reasons.
It may not be the norm, but in a way it is, because it cuts to the heart of something I've talked about both on the regular show and the premium shows, is like, David Bixenspan, you're not the moral center here. Essentially, we've done three Patreon shows so far. You have, I would say of those three shows, you've plotted, you know, two and a third of the three shows, you know, and they've been utterly horrifying. And the one Patreon show that I had some say over, the part that actually seemed to horrify and rankle your soul the most, that seemed to reach up inside you and upset you, it wasn't when the homie Glenn Hobbs got up and talked about pumpkins and human sacrifice and how many babies are killed every single Halloween. It wasn't when Ann Landers told us about, you know, over a 10-year period, not just how fourth graders, 80% of them, would best like to celebrate Halloween by killing somebody, but that all of their candy is going to be poisoned and filled with razor blades. We listened to Pat Robertson talk about, I mean, if your kid wants to go to a haunted house, you definitely need to ostracize him and make sure that he can't have any friends. And if you do buy something from a secondhand store, you should get your clothing and your jewelry exercised lest a demonic spirit take over your life. You selected a bunch of fucking weird-ass puppets and found them so affecting that it just completely broke the extra bone in your head. So through three Patreon episodes, we've had three episodes. If we're using baseball analogies, you've basically pitched two and a third. And what you've basically succeeded in is either absolutely horrifying me or in turn horrifying yourself.
Sounds about right.
Sounds like $5 to me, really.
And then there's Sleepaway Camp.
And then there's Sleepaway Camp. Do you got a super small teaser? Is there anything we can, you know, anything we just
There is on this feed, if you subscribe to the regular Two Scoops feed, or you can just go to twoscoopspod.com and listen. We do have a sample teaser of the latest episode, which is something of the latest Patreon episode, which is something we'll be doing from now on.
It's also notable that you chose a preview, which I mean, I think is a fantastic preview and, you know, gets you into the mood of the show and the film. But I think it's notable that you kind of broke the episode into two Patreon shows where you did. I get the logical idea behind splitting it right before the big reveal, before we talk about the climax, since it is the famous and indelible, notorious part of Sleepaway Camp. At the same time, it is also right around the part where I was very much trying to look at the clock and stay on task, on focus, be a good host.
Oh, sure you were.
And you thought it'd be like a good time to start bringing up like the Jeff Stryker penis pump. So yeah, just let me hear him say cock and then we can move on. Cock.
Cock.
Can I hear that again there, Jeff Stryker?
Cock.
Tell me more about the executive model. Also, shouts to the new patrons who are up on that $5 dope shit, getting that exclusive extra weekly show. Since we last did the Sleepaway Camp show, Dosh Donmeyer, Rich Rulin, Joseph Aboda, Tony DeFess, you're all fantastic people. Tell a friend to tell a friend. Two Scoops Pod's where it's at if you want to break the extra bone in your head. And,
boy, it's time for that.
You know, normally when we break the bones in one another's heads, we're talking clean fractures. You know, maybe it gets bad. There's a spiral fracture, but we can put some screws in. The bone will be good as new. This is the kind of thing that may take the extra bone in both of our heads, Bix, and turn it to dust entirely.
Yeah, this is going to be a barbed wire baseball bat to the head.
This is this might be like a exploding bombs deathmatch type thing. We might not get out of the way in time. Are you ready to get literary, David Bixenspan?
I'm ready to get very literary.
Let's take our pants off and do this.
Send something to Jordan that he has never seen before, not once. And perhaps this will be tied into something else that we may discuss, perhaps not as graphically, one would hope. Should I tell you what it is before I send it to you, or do I just need you to discover it as you click the link?
I love that cold shit. As much as I think I've explained this before on the show, I'm someone who, in terms of movies and the like, I'm never affected by spoilers. I don't mind knowing the plot of a movie. I've seen great films. You know, I saw The Usual Suspects and lots of other films that have classic twists, knowing exactly what I was getting into, and still love them. Doesn't matter to me. However, something like this, I like to be caught off guard. So clicking on this now, going to chancesarchive.net, /stories/toit.html. I'm excited, Bix. It appears that I'm going to get to read some Law & Order fan fiction. Before I dive in and do a dramatic reading, would you like to cue the audience up on, I don't know, any kind of plot elements or what era I'm dealing with?
You are dealing with, so what do you want me to tell you? Who or where?
Honestly, I might even take off my headset for this. I don't necessarily want the spoilers, but let the audience know what era of Law & Order fanfic we're dealing with, what kind of characters we're
dealing
with. I mean, I know I'm about to find out, but, you know, let the readers know ahead of time so they can form that 30-second, like, oh my God, this is what Jordan's reading about.
Oh, so are you going to scroll past who this is about? I'm a little confused here.
No. I've opened it up, but I clicked the tab away. And as you're about to spoil, I'm actually about to remove my headset from my head for a 5 to 10 second period. So the second I click on this text, it is literally as fresh could be.
But
I'm coming in
the
this
audience,
cold.
But you want everyone listening to know before you?
Okay. Yeah, just a little bit of heads up so they can form a little bit of an appetite. So I'm muting. I'm taking my headset on. Bix, you got 10 to 15 seconds to let the folks know what I'm about to get into.
All right, this is Get Used to It, rated NC-17. It is a Law & Order / Vic pairing up Michael Cutter and Jack McCoy. This is entirely a product of my own imagination, says the author Angsty Time Lord, and I make no profit from it. I do not own Michael Cutter or Jack McCoy, just borrowing them for a while. Please do not sue.
You've paused. I'm assuming you're done explaining.
Yes, that was very well timed, actually, on your part.
Well, I mean, like, I had...
You could tell there were noises going on.
Exactly. I had my headset beside me with my hands over the things. I could obviously tell when you stopped speaking, and I threw them back on quickly. I'm like a ninja. So, okay, I'm clicking on the tab. Title, Get Used to It, by Angsty Time Lord, which sounds like an AOL screen name from 15 years ago. I'm excited.
It also sounds like someone trying to make up a fake fanfic writer name, like, for comedic purposes.
Rating NC-17. Oh boy. Fandom Law & Order. Pairing Michael Cutler and Jack McCoy. Oh boy. I didn't know with all fan fiction that they listed these kind of things above. Bix, I've never been to chancesarchive.net. Is this purely a fan fiction site?
I don't know. Let's find out.
Okay, I've clicked back on it. Allo/Blackadder/.
Wait, allo and Blackadder/? Criminal Minds, CSI, Doctor Who.
CSI/, to be clear.
Yes.
Doctor Who, Galaxy Quest/, Harry Potter/, okay. Obviously, as I just mentioned, Law & Order/, Master and Wolf, Snape and Lupin, A Fuck You Fest. I assume that's some Harry Potter thing. Person of Interest / Red Dwarf / Holy shit. Star Trek / Supernatural /
Of course.
And Torchwood / Okay.
I'm actually surprised there's no Gilmore Girls along with everything else there.
I've taken a deep breath. David Bixenspan, shall I begin?
I think you have to.
All right, so I'm going to assume that this is going to open up in the Manhattan District Attorney's office. Chung Chung indeed. Oh, I nailed it too. Michael sighed as he made the way down the hall to Jack's office. He had no idea why he'd been asked to have a conference with his boss, but he could only hope that he hadn't done something to screw up and make Jack annoyed with him. No, he couldn't have done anything. At least, not anything associated with work. He told himself with a frown. As far as he knew, unless there had been some development in a case he didn't know about. Everything was going smoothly in the office. And Jack had made it clear in no uncertain terms that the relationship in the bedroom wasn't going to extend to the office. That's a chung chung, Poppy. Can I get that? So we're just casually moving on like Michael Cutter's fucking Jack McCoy. Got it. Here, they would be just as they'd always been, co-workers with no hint of any kind of personal relationship between them. Yes, they both knew better, and anyone who knew them both well probably did too. He'd seen the knowing glances thrown their way, and he was aware that people wondered about both of them, but he hadn't cared. Not until now. If anyone so much as guessed at the truth of his relationship with Jack, would his boss be angry enough about that to end what they'd so recently started? Jack wasn't the kind of man who'd put up with personal relationships bleeding over into his work.
Have you ever watched this show?
Have you ever fucking seen Law and Order? Are you kidding me? I thought this whole story was being set up by someone that had seen the depth and breadth of Law and Order and was aware that, you know, maybe Jack just doesn't lust for the women he works with. Maybe he lusts for all of his intellectually apt, legally savvy coworkers. I'm willing to buy that. Like I said, suspension of disbelief. This is what makes good stories happen. Sometimes you have to buy into the value set and morality of a certain kind of story to understand the point that it's making. I'm there. However, have you ever seen Law and Order? Do you remember when Claire died? Do you even care? You should. David Bix thinks she's the best junior ADA ever. He's a soft man that was worried he would get terrorized on Twitter by feminists. You can stop me when I'm lying. Where was I at? Oh, right. Of course.
Or she is.
Of course. He'd had affairs with women who'd worked in the office before. That was common knowledge. But it didn't seem to affect his standing with colleagues.
Then are they talking about Jack as a boss then as opposed to
yes.
Jack? Yes. Okay. But even then, I mean, he was still technically the boss of...
Correct.
So they mean Jack is an elected official then.
Yes. But it was different when the district attorney was having an affair with a man, Mike thought, a scowl settling into his features. It was fine for him to fuck a woman. Then he was considered a stud, a real man. But because Mike had the wrong anatomy, the relationship was taboo. Now, Bix, maybe one day we'll get to a full Jack McCoy episode where, I mean, I'm never going to argue that Jack McCoy is a fucking man. Because he is a full-blown sociopath that sets the TV template for the prosecutor, legislator, cop, politician, whoever is so solipsistically obsessed with the one realm of jurisprudence and legality that they kind of live in, that they will do absolutely anything and like break the law and denigrate themselves and others as people in order to put these people behind bars simply because they're pathologically driven to punish people who've committed crimes. That would be fantastic. That would be that'd be a great show. I would love to see that kind of thing. Unfortunately, that's not the way we're having the real manhood of Jack McCoy manifested here, Bix.
No, it's not.
He adjusted his tie and cleared his throat before he pulled the door open of Jack's office. The other man looked up, an inquiring expression on his face. That look relaxed into a hint of a smile when he saw that it was Mike who'd opened the door. Sit down. Jack waved a hand towards the couch in his office, leaning back in his chair. We have a few things to talk about, and you might as well be comfortable while we're doing it. His tone was almost conversational. He sounded friendly and relaxed. Again, have you even seen Law and Order? Have you seen how Jack McCoy talks to literally everybody? Be them coworkers, his daughters, subordinates, superiors... Is conversational really the way you would describe any John J. McCoy discourse, Bix?
No.
Highly, like, questioning and confrontational is maybe, like, the easiest adjectival way to get to the heart of the way Jack McCoy talks to people. Nonetheless.
Other than maybe, like, late Claire era eating Chinese food together.
Even then, Claire brings up an idea. Jack has a questioning counterpoint. Jack is the classic answer a question with a question. Hard press, drop philosophy on you, drop debate team shit on you. He's an impossible arrogant nerd. Basically. I mean, the only ways they manifest Jack McCoy's kind of greater butch existence in this show is they mention on spontaneous occasions that The Clash is his favorite band and he's super into riding motorcycles. That's it.
Oh, so I didn't realize you were, did you want me to say something there?
No, you don't have to say anything. Jack McCoy is about to try to fuck Michael Cutter, I suppose. You might as well tell me the worst, he sighed as he seated himself on the couch. Somebody found out about us, didn't they? No, nobody's found out, Jack shook his head, a real small smirk on his lips. And there's not really anything for us to talk about. It's for me to talk and for you to listen. I just called you in here so that the rules of a relationship, or so you could know that the rules of a relationship have changed. Changed? Mike could feel his muscles tensing, his eyes widening in surprise before he remembered to control his expression, to try and keep his features bland. What did Jack mean, changed? That could mean a lot of things. Yes, changed, Jack told him as he leaned forward to gaze into Michael's eyes. Indeed. You're my slave in the office, as well as in the bedroom. I can do anything I want to you. You belong to me, Mike. You're... What's that word, Bix? Can I hear it from Jeff Stryker? Your
cock.
That's the one. Your cock. Your balls. Your ass. Oh, can I hear that ass?
No, that's technically part of a different podcast.
I know it's part of a different podcast, but it would make me excited and inspire me to keep reading.
I can't do that. I can't.
Little bit of crossover? I'm a bad influence, Bix. Right, come on.
I can't betray a trust like that.
Every inch of you belongs to me. Mike swallowed hard, completely forgetting to keep his features schooled into a neutral expression. He hadn't expected this, not at all. It seemed that every time he thought he was getting close to knowing Jack, the other man threw him a ball to left field. You're my slave 24/7, Mike, Jack whispered, his voice low and intense. Again, low and intense. Have you even seen Jack McCoy, the character? The way that he is portrayed? There is no low and intense. There is only high and intense. This is the dude that's routinely yelling in courtrooms while prosecuting two defense attorneys, like, shut the hell up. Shut your mouth. This is a dude that stakes out other lawyers in public settings with media and bosses and power players around and, you know, accuses them of, putting clients up to perjure themselves or participating in some kind of legal misconduct or, you know, some kind of conflict of interest. This is a man not from the politics of contemplation, as you might imagine in law.
His default timbre is the one he uses when he tells a defense attorney that he's going to bring them up before the ethics committee.
Yes, and which is again a classic Jack McCoy. Like, I'm freaking out on my adversary. It's not good enough that maybe I found the smoking gun. I'm going to put this case away. I need to terrify them to their face and make them think that I'm going to take away their ability to practice law. This man is vengeful. He is spiteful. If you watch Law and Order, and I know that, you know, it seems like 50-50 with our listener base so far. You got half the people who are diehard Law and Order folks and another half who are like, never really given Law and Order a chance, but I want to give it the deep dive now. Which is great. But if you've seen Jack McCoy, confrontational, bullshy, threatening, he may be a great character. He may define everything that a police or legal procedural should be on television, but he's not fundamentally a lawfully good man. Like, if he was a Dungeons and Dragons character, like, he would be chaotically good. Like Jack McCoy would kill one person to save 10 innocent people without thinking about it.
Oh, so wait, that's a Dungeons & Dragons thing? I feel like I should know that, but I feel like I didn't.
Bix, dog, really? Are you going to act like you weren't this kind of nerd growing up? I know that like,
no,
you're...
I legit never played actual Dungeons & Dragons, no.
I only played a sparing amount of Dungeons & Dragons growing up because I grew up in an era where you had like 8 and 16-bit RPGs and like... What, I'm gonna bust out a bunch of graph paper and draw shit with a ruler?
And a 16-sided die.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's the other thing, too, is, like, I bought the die as a kid. Like, oh, it'll be cool. Like, I can play Dungeons & Dragons. I probably used the 20-sided and 10-sided die. I bought the whole pulley tube that had, like, the 10, the 16, the 12, 10, 8, 6, and then, like, the die that had, like, 8 and were various shapes. I bought all that shit as a kid because I was full blown on the RPG thing. But I very quickly realized, like, yeah, drawing a map on a piece of grid paper fucking sucks.
Also, don't forget, we also had the arcade game Beat 'em Up Dungeons & Dragons 2.
Which, in fairness, the Dungeons & Dragons arcade hack and slashes are actually fantastic games. They actually, I think, do a great job combining hack and slash elements, RPG elements. If you're the kind of person that digs the arcade era, if you're the kind of person that isn't super into RPGs but likes kind of RPG elements in your games, and certainly if you're a beat 'em up or hack and slash person, the original D&D arcade games are just phenomenal.
Those are some of the best arcade games that ever came out on consoles.
You excited to hear about Jack McCoy fucking Michael Cutter?
Not necessarily in detail, but sure.
Mike rose to his feet. Unsure if he'd be able to make it to the space that Jack indicated behind the desk.
Oh, dear.
His legs suddenly felt watery, his breath coming faster, his heart beating in triple time. But he couldn't refuse, as he was told. He couldn't refuse to do as he was told to do. Jack pushed back his chair as Mike hesitantly placed his palms on the desk, bending over slightly. He wanted to look over his shoulder and see Jack's expression. The other man was clearly getting a very nice view of his ass, considering that it was literally in his face. Where is Connie in the midst of all this, by the way? Is she
doing
busy?
Things that DA's office investigators would actually be doing?
I mean, here's the thing, though. If she's pulling files, it's like, hey, girl, this is what your two subordinates are doing. Can I convince you to do likewise? If I found her,
saying that this is a move by Jack to actually get Connie and Mike together.
No, I'm saying this is a move by Jack to get me and Connie together. This is about me and Alana De La Garza. I have no legal background.
Oh, this is now suddenly a Jordan Breen self-insert fic.
Yeah, I'm like a bike courier, even though I'm a 29-year-old man who literally can't fucking ride a bicycle. And the first person who says shit about it in emails, I'll punch you in the head. It's caused me a lot of strife with my father up until I was about 13 years old. I'm real sensitive about it. It's weird. Don't test me. So I'm like a bike messenger, even though I can't ride a bicycle. And I have like some important legal document that, I mean, it's not going to be faxed. It's 20, blah, what year? Law and Order go off the air, 2012.
Sure, go with it.
So it's 2011, 2010. I'm on my bicycle that I can't ride, but I can ride it because I'm in my erotic fanfic. And yeah, I mean, Jack and Cutter are tied up. They're banging in Jack's office. Connie, you know, she ate a solid lunch. She used the chopsticks and ate out of the little Chinese delivery thing. She's hanging out in the library. She's researching precedents, but. There's a bike messenger there. Special kind of bike messenger, Bix. One who can't ride a bicycle. A magical kind of bike messenger. I'm about to show her what she's been missing.
But we're not here about you. To hear about you.
No, that's true. We're here about, unfortunately, Jack McCoy fucking one of his employees here. Nice view to see first thing in the morning, Jack murmured, squeezing one cheek gently. Mike couldn't
point out that I'm not sure you're even halfway in, so we may need to skip in a moment.
I've been skipping mad paragraphs. Don't act like I don't know how
it's
to.
Actually, been flowing fairly well.
That's what I mean. Don't act like I don't know how to dramatically read fanfic. I know what's important. Like, you know, I know what's important. It's the coming. Anyway, Mike couldn't keep back a gasp that was part pleasure, part surprise. Another gasp was torn from his throat when lubed fingers stroked over his opening and then pressed inside him, the first, quickly followed by a second. He squeezed his eyes closed as the other man's fingers scissored inside him, opening him, preparing him for whatever was to come. Mike looked over at the door, his face going pale as he realized that it wasn't locked. Any could walk in at any time and see what was going on. It wouldn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that even if they couldn't see Jack's hand, not with him bent over the desk like this, it wouldn't matter. Was Jack going to fuck him right here in the office? Somehow that didn't seem likely, even though his words might have indicated otherwise. Michael was fairly sure that he wasn't ready to go quite that far with their heightened relationship. Besides, Jack was still sitting in his chair. If he'd intended them to have sex, Mike was sure he would be standing up, unzipping his pants by now. He showed no signs of doing that, so Mike had to assume that Jack had something else in mind. His lover's fingers slipped out of him, almost making him sigh with regret.
Oh no.
He wanted to ask Jack what he intended to do. It was on the tip of his tongue to do so. So when he felt Jack's fingers spreading his cheeks again and something pressing against him that was definitely not a cock, and whatever it was big and cold. Bix. The tip pressed inside him, almost wringing a cry from his lips.
What was that about?
It says it in the text. I'm just reading it the way it's written. I'm sorry.
No,
it says it right there. It says, whatever it was big and cold, and Bix, the tip pressed inside him. I mean, like I said, I didn't write this thing, man. It just says it this way. Anyway, Bix, the tip pressed inside him, almost wringing a cry from his lips before he remembered where they were, and he managed to hold it inside and hold it back. Feels like it's too big for you, doesn't it? Jack murmured.
Come on, say it is Jack.
I'm going to try. It feels like it's too big for you, doesn't it? Jack murmured as the object continued to press forward. Mike couldn't speak for fear of moaning aloud. He merely nodded his head, trying to force himself to relax, but unable to do so.
Well, then this isn't going to go well.
It's way too big, Jack. Mike choked out, lowering his head until his nose was almost touching the desk. He didn't realize he was whimpering aloud until a few moments later, his fingers clutching at the edge of the desk as though to hold himself up. Shh. No, it's not, Jack said, one hand resting on the small of Mike's back as if the other man was trying to soothe him. Holy shit!
That was okay. What broke.
I mean, it didn't prank me, but it's just like super creepy. Okay, back to the fanfic boys. As he spoke, the forward motion stopped.
I honestly prefer if you give up on the fanfic boys.
No, never. Mike realized that whatever the object was, it was finally all the way inside of him. Thank goodness. He tightened his muscles experimentally, grimacing as he did so. It was obvious a plug. It was obviously a plug. But he hadn't expected Jack to use one that was so damn thick. Taking a deep breath, he raised his head but didn't move from his position. He wouldn't do that till Jack gave him permission to do so.
tinyurl.com/2scoopsamazon.
What the hell did I do to deserve this? Mike asked, instantly regretting his words the moment they were out of his mouth. He didn't have the right to question Jack. This man was his master, and he'd agreed to accept that hierarchy. He just hadn't expected anything quite like this. What did you do? Jack asked, getting to his feet and moving behind Mike, using the fingers of one hand to push the anal plug in deeper while he pulled the other man's pants up with the other. You agreed to be my slave. It's too late to back out now. I'm not backing out, Michael protested as he stood up slowly, automatically zipping up his pants and rebuckling his belt. I like how that's just like reflexive for any like white, ostensibly like waspy American male in a position of power, like just get fucked by a dude and stand up and like totally try to act like it's normal. Like you're just like, oh no, like this isn't who I am. I hate this. Actually, I'm not gay at all. It's okay, Michael Cutter. If you and Jack McCoy are dope together, you're dope together. You know, I'm not going to say that all of Manhattan, all of New York is going to agree with the DA banging one of his associate DAs and that kind of thing. But if you guys are in love, you guys are in love. If it's meant to be, it's meant to be.
I don't know if they're in love, though. I thought he was in love with Connie. I thought Mike was. Did he realize it was unrequited and decided to find something more semi-requited?
Well, we established through our analysis of the junior ADAs that clearly they have some sexual tension. So maybe this is how Cutter's blowing it off. Maybe this is how I get into the Law and Order narrative. Like I said, I mean, I can't ride a bike, but I'm dying to be the bike messenger to the Manhattan DA office. Connie Rubirosa's got to need lots of deliveries, and boy, oh boy, have I got them. And clearly her immediate subordinates, they're tied up. They're having the sex. Excuse me, her immediate superiors. I, in fact, the bicycle boy who can't ride the bicycle. I, David Bixenspan, am the subordinate. I will pull all the portfolios from the legal stacks. I will find all the books. I know the Dewey Decimal System. I have a bicycle that I can't ride. I can go to other courthouses. I can make photocopies. Whatever Connie needs. Nonetheless, you'll get used to it, Jack told him, raising an eyebrow, casting a pointed glance toward Mike's crotch. And you won't try to ease that problem either. What? Mike was even more dumbfounded. Was Jack going off the deep end? You can't expect me to concentrate on a case with a raging hard on and a plug up my ass.
This is the worst thing I've ever seen.
That's too much for anyone to take. Come on, Jack. Cut me some slack here. Jack's only answer was a shake of his head and a devilish grin. I want to make sure you're ready for me when you come to the house tonight, he told Mike, leaning forward and whispering into his ear. Don't worry, Mike. It all turns into pleasure in the end. Michael swallowed hard, his mouth suddenly dry. He hadn't realized just what he was getting into when he'd agreed to this arrangement with Jack, but he was learning fast. Maybe he'd bitten off more than he could chew. But as Jack had said, it's too late to back out now. No, he'd see this through, no matter how hard it was. He'd gotten himself into this, and besides, he wanted this man. A part of him was aroused by the way he was being treated, and he didn't want to stop. This was the most exciting thing he'd ever let himself be subjected to. He took a step forward, gasping as the plug pushed more deeply inside of him. By the time he got to the door, his teeth were digging into his lower lip. Jack was right about having to take some time to accustom himself to being filled like this. But get used to it he would, he thought, opening the door with a quick glance back at Jack. The older man was back in his chair, a satisfied smile on his face as he watched his ADA. Or was that his slave? Mike couldn't tell the difference anymore, and he walked slowly out of his office. Finn. Bix, I mean, you picked the story out. How would you rate my dramatic reading?
I did not read that far. I'm going to admit that. I'm going to rate your reading.
I mean, okay, so don't rate the original text, but I mean, surely we're doing a podcast together. You didn't take your headphones off and ignore me while I was doing this romantic, sexual, transgressive fan fiction reading.
No, I did not.
All right. So you heard both the entirety of my reading. Also, knowing how well I edited this on the fly, knowing what kinds of paragraphs to skip, what kind of paragraphs would be most titillating and upsetting for you in the listener base. Knowing that I was doing this on the fly live, having to maintain my cool while, you know, constantly looking two or three paragraphs ahead and trying to find where the juicy shit was and edit this in a good way for radio time. How would you rate me? I feel like I knocked this out of the park, B.
You want my honest reaction to this?
Yeah, well, I don't want you to lie to me. That, Bix, what kind of relationship is that?
That's true. No, you're right. You're right. So you want my honest reaction?
Always.
Ah!
But so subject matter. But is do you really feel that way about my dramatic, sexy reading? Did it really upset you that much?
In its own way, yes.
So suffice to say, as hard as I tried here, I mean that's my husky voice. That's my Barry White voice. That's my serious doing a live read, doing a commercial, trying to seduce the femme kind of voice.
Yeah, and I realized we missed an important opportunity.
What's that?
But I poop from there.
Shoutouts to every Two Scoops listener who's aware of what that comes from. And if you don't, Bix will surely play that clip often enough to eventually break the bone in the front of my brain and I'll have a meltdown on air and eventually I'll divulge all details. Until then, we'll keep it kind of like a disgusting scavenger hunt. Bix, can I hear it one more time?
But I poop from there.
Oh, Jesus Christ. It also doesn't help that I think it's fair to say that our listeners could maybe intuit that's from a scene from a pornographic film. It certainly doesn't help the content of that pornographic film that it features I won't put it on you, Bix, and say please describe the body of female porn star Melissa Ashley. But
you're the one who told me about this.
I know. You were completely oblivious to this. This is something that I broke and spoiled your brain with. But having sent you the clip, let me size it up like this. Knowing what your average porn star looks like, and frankly, even though it's not my cup of tea, why a lot of people react to a certain kind of porn star. There's a porn star look. It may evolve over the years. We may not have the, standard bleach blonde, double D, fake tits, Jenna Jameson look that we had from the mid to late 90s, although it still perseveres in various forms. There's a wide variety. I think now, like there was literally, without turning this into something that's inappropriate for iTunes, there was literally a story.
Oh, yeah, because we didn't do that already.
Yeah, exactly. There was literally a story on Vice like a week ago talking about how basically the cream pie fetish had become big money for porn sites and porn tube sites and essentially probing how something that's like very essential and biological, that is in fact, if you are unaware, how you make a baby. But it wasn't really catered to as a fetish until very recently, but yet has blown up in popularity. So I feel like on the porn side, you can pretty much find anything that you're just about into. But going back to that clip, we're not just dealing with a horrifically acted attempted anal clip. We're also dealing with a clip that features porn star Melissa Ashley. And I mean, Bix, like I said, I won't give you the onus of describing her, but I will simply rely on you to co-sign on my analysis. And I'm sure you're going to be like, oh, I can't remember the clip, even though that's bullshit. She may resemble a 10-year-old boy more than any famous porn star ever.
I'm sure that's true.
Thank you, Bix. That's about exactly the thing I was looking for out of you. So, McCoy and Cutter. I mean, what could have been for Connie Rubirosa moving up the legal chain if not for these people having a clandestine relationship? Am I right?
Yeah, but well, they were both already her boss, though.
They were both already your boss, but obviously you get into a romantic relationship like that where you both have superior power over an individual. You're only going to hold them down. You're only going to look out for your own best interests.
Yes. Yes.
I mean,
what about the bike messenger, though?
I feel like the bike messenger is a good guy. I feel like the bike messenger, they show some scenes of him on the road. It appears he can't actually drive the bicycle, which I find strange. But as far as casting goes, he's of an appropriate male height for this kind of romantic role. He's kind of like hairy and furry. Very hot now.
Got some really well-kept hair. A lot of product.
Tons of product. Well-groomed, massive beard. Like, really the kind of dude that every other motherfucker on Instagram has aped their look off of for the last 3 years. Even if he can't ride the bike, I feel like we edit those scenes out. Once he gets to the scene where he has to deliver, I don't know. Bix, you got some kind of law degree. What do bicycle people deliver to offices like this? I'm not delivering papers. Summonses. Yeah, it's like, but what's on these papers? What's on the papers I'm delivering? Do I need to know?
Words.
I don't even need to know. So I'm riding this bicycle that I can't ride. There's words on paper. I don't know what they say. They're in a craft tube. They got a name on them. I just bring them to the right floor, the right name. Excuse me. I'm looking for Assistant District Attorney Constance Rubirosa. And then some lady who's like 60 and already has grandkids. She points me down to a library. I go there. It's just me and Elena De La Garza. She kind of knows in her heart of hearts and mind of minds that the reason there's really tension with Cutter is she loves him, but she knows deep in her heart that him and Jack, they got this thing. It might be long term.
But then it turns out that the bike messenger is a suspect.
You're not wrong.
He says, send Briscoe and Logan to his apartment. Well, I know it's not Briscoe and Logan at this point, but of course it's send Briscoe and Logan to his apartment.
No, it's whoever our favorite cast is. Sure. It's Briscoe and Logan.
Okay.
Briscoe shows up. He's wearing his brown leather jacket and one of the two suits he owns with the flannel tie, which is one of the four ties he owns.
He's looking at the bike messenger's VHS collection. He says to Logan, "Who the hell is Imanari?"
I come in. I do a sliding leg lock on Chris Noth. Lenny Briscoe apprehends me. It's tragic. I didn't deserve to go down like this. And all because I had a crush on the junior ADA. I was just dropping off some documents. She flirted a bit. Do I really got to be someone who's interviewed in the first 30 minutes?
Canadian bike messenger, how do you plead?
The real question is, how do Lenny Briscoe and Mike Logan make fun of me? Because that's like the 1-2 punch of cops that are most due to kind of get up in your way of living. Say some shit about like your life, your apartment, your choices, your name, your job. They're going to try to affect you and make you feel some type of way.
I would go with well, we got to think about it. This is Briscoe and Logan. Let's just say that it's a Briscoe and Logan type of era and pop culture reference. I will go with, listen, Bart Simpson, I do have a cow.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. I'm on a skateboard in this scene also, so it's extra good. Additionally, as they've cuffed me, I've told them to eat my shorts. It's very 1991.
You get no argument from me there. But if your obstruction allows a massacre to happen, I will crucify you, Mr. Kralik. I will charge you with negligent homicide, and after I convict you, I will resign my job and represent the families of the victims in a wrongful death suit against you and the union. By the time I'm done, you'll be finished. So my advice to you is get out of my way!
Did you know it was wrong when you woke up that morning?
Yes.
Did you know it was wrong when you ate your cereal?
Yes.
He's badgering, Your Honor.
Sit down and shut up, Mr. Feynman.
Overruled. And you will address the court from now on, Mr. McCoy.
So as we look back on whatever that was.
That was Manhattan, Kings County, District Attorney.
New York County.
Jack McCoy having sex.
County is Brooklyn.
Having sex with his subordinate.
In a manner of speaking.
Sexually slavifying his professional subordinate, ADA Michael Cutter. Is that a fair way of putting that?
Sure. Executive ADA Michael Cutter.
So Michael Cutter, still undecided on whether or not to pronounce it Linus or Linus Roach. Either way, in spite of how good his American accent is, doesn't really matter here, Bix. He's getting subjugated by old Sam Waterston.
I reflect on this, and I think about, and I'd like your thoughts on what you would pick as well. Who is the one true pair of Law and Order? Kind of bring the whole Law and Order and the fanfic thing full circle. Like, is it Jack and Claire? Is it Cutter and Connie? Is it? is there anyone else? I guess Van Buren and her fiance at the end of the series.
That's a profound question, though, with Law and Order, given how both relationships develop in the span of the show, as well as how certain people's tenure on the show develops. You know what I mean? I think in terms of if you were imagining two real people being together who had – you knew for a fact. They gave you that tidbit that they'd been together. Wouldn't you want to see a child between Jack McCoy and Claire Kincaid?
Sure.
How legally clever would this child be? What an achiever it would be.
Very.
What kind of interesting person would this be given both parents? So I think given the quality of the characters, the way they actually set it up and let you know that it's a real thing, if I had to choose a Law and Order pairing, real or slightly fan fictional, I would still choose the more real, tangible Jack McCoy and Claire Kincaid. Never mind that Claire would never get the chance to be a fantastic mother and a legal mind for these children as she died in a car accident. But as much as, and we discussed this when we did the junior ADA hierarchy list, the tension between Michael Cutter and Connie Ruberosa, with all due respect to my non-bicycle riding, bicycle messenger injection, it is, I think, one of the great sexual tensions that we ever got to observe for a long spanning period of time in a decent television show. But it's still not the same. It's not canonically consummated. And more than that, I don't think it really speaks to necessarily what we get with Law and Order. Because what we get with Law and Order is, you know, as we discussed, I love the fact that Michael and Connie never come together. I love the fact that the last Law and Order episode is not them deciding that they're going to start a family together or start an independent law practice. What we do get is Jack McCoy, this solipsistic man whose whole life is just trying to convict ne'er-do-wells and bend the law however he can. Those rare moments where the gavel and the robe and the wig, if you're British, it all recedes, and all he sees is his female junior superior. Stereotypical as it might be, it is of the character. It fits, as we discussed, with the Claire Kincaid character. If there was any Law and Order relationship that I would ever hope either really existed for however long it might last, or especially produced a progeny, I think it's got to be the McCoy Kincaid DNA hookup.
Yeah, you know, like we talked about now, like we talked about on the Junior ADA show, the way that they kind of have it start with Claire saying, like, nah, not gonna happen, and then it kind of organically happens, and it's happening even though it's not really happening in front of us, because we don't actually find out for a fact that it's happening until after Claire's killed off, even though they kind of confirm it in one of her last episodes. It works for the same reason that Connie and Cutter not actually getting together works.
And but the world of internet is filled with slashfic, yes, though, Bix. This is the kind of thing that I think maybe smarts the most about the modern iteration of fan fiction, is we don't even if you're going to impart sexual narratives on a particular story or realm or entire franchise.
Yes, use it to flesh out what if Claire didn't die. Use it for, I don't know, get your mind out of the gutter and use it for things other than people fucking.
And it's not like Slash fix your mind in the gutter. It's just you got to – I feel like the level of permissibility is based on what the characters tell you, you know? If – I don't know what the Law & Order fan fiction universe is like, but I'm willing to bet – there's probably like a large contingent of people who feel like even knowing how Slash Fic has a resonant role throughout the history of fan fiction and what an important, indelible role it plays, that they still understand that Jack McCoy's character is that he pervs on his junior ADAs against his better judgment. Pardon me if I find someone who's fascinating that I work with more interesting than someone I meet in a bar.
Yep.
That's what you have to work with. And I think, you know, not that either of us are big fan fiction readers, but, you know, using Law & Order as a guinea pig in this case as an example, as a test case, that's the kind of thing we would want to read within this realm. Things that correspond to the actual character.
If you want to imagine that Jack McCoy is bisexual and having an affair with Michael Cutter, that is the lens you do it through.
Instead of just, hey, I know you're not doing bad on any cases, but please bend over the desk of the Manhattan DA and allow me to insert a butt plug into you while you walk around our office for the rest of the day.
It's so specific. Like, all of these, it just... It's like most fanfic is like it was written by, like, a Tommy Wiseau type figure. You know what I mean?
But here's the thing, Bix. You know better, and I'll give you the final comment on this. You know better in the sense that you know it's not a Tommy Wiseau. It may be someone who is... mentally fraught or socially inept in some kind of way, like the Room writer, director, financier, auteur Tommy Wiseau is and was. You might want to imagine that, but the fact of the matter is most of these people who are putting together these text files for fanfic.net or like whatever the case might be, that is not what they're out for. So when you see, be it Jack McCoy wanting to put a butt plug into Michael Cutter in season 17, 18, 19, 20 as he walks around the Manhattan DA's office, or when you see absolutely horrific pro wrestling type stuff where Randy Orton's waiting for his next big pay-per-view matchup against John Cena so he could sexually molest him in front of millions of people for $60 a pop. How do you reconcile the difference between this and what we started with? Which, even if it started in a sexual realm, even if you clearly identify in the 60s that lead users, people who are intimately interested in Star Trek, who really take this to heart, even if these people are keen to write Kirk, Spock, Slash Fic in 1971, how do you reconcile the world that we've got to from this? Because it's not just about sexual transgression or an academic reading of how you're changing narratives or affecting them for a minority community. This is, in this point in time, this is about sexual wantonness in front of your keyboard at your earliest dismissal.
So what's your question for me?
How have we got here? How did this happen? Why are we not just dealing with Kirk and Spock are in the transporter room. Things are a little tense. Spock has that classic Vulcan masculine aroma. How have we gone past that to straight up like Harry Potter characters raping each other and Jack McCoy, the democratically elected district attorney of Manhattan, is like raping his subordinates?
Well... how did we get there? Because now, if you want to learn about anything or think something might exist and it could exist or whatever, you just put those words into the Google machine and you find out. And if you find out that it even might be a thing to someone, suddenly you have an audience. Does that make sense?
This absolutely makes sense, but it beckons the question, David Bixenspan. Okay. In the past, people did all kinds of psychotic, crazy things. I've mentioned in my past my love for 19th century Midwestern history, the pioneering area, or the pioneering era, what Little House on the Prairie really would have looked like, what people in the winter of 1861 in Wisconsin really had to deal with. And it certainly wasn't, you know, sewing their daughter a new dress and, like, you know, gelding a horse or anything like that. It was a horrific snowfall and your children dying of diphtheria.
It's Oregon Trail.
Exactly. So there's something to be said for kind of like the jump from the pre-modern to the modern. But we're not talking about 150 years. We're talking about a very slight period. And we're talking about something in Star Trek that sets the template for this, which is set in the future. There is, I think, much to be said for Gene Roddenberry's vision of the future. One of the things that Star Trek, kind of champions always bring up is the idea that this whole show is based around how do we live harmoniously? How do we meet other people, other cultures, other planets? How do we live amongst one another in a state of peace without being at one another's throats while, you know, in a very relativistic way, respecting our cultures and ideas and mores? That's where this art comes from. And yet now it's come down to like sorcerers raping sorcerers who are 14 years old in Harry Potter. Is this a classic case of convenience? The fact that everyone has a keyboard put in front of them now? You don't have to be part of, you know, Spockophilia or some kind of obscure fan fiction or fan-oriented magazine in the 1970s or 1980s. Like you said, you can literally Google this and find out that there's someone who shares, if not your fetish, than your profound, insane world delusion.
To sum it up, in the words of a not-quite-great lizard man, they promised us flying cars. They gave us 140 characters. Peace.